This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Sarah Dingle. This Thursday, the nation finally has a date, May the 18th. Scott Morrison lays down his re-election credentials while Bill Shorten tells voters he is ready for the top job. As both sides kick off 5 weeks of political warfare, we'll go across the country, hearing from politicians and listening to the people who will be deciding the nation's future.
We need government, not politics.
A lot of people around here are concerned about climate and people, and that just being ignored.
Hospitals, infrastructure, schooling definitely, and, you know, hopefully making Australia a better place.
So, does the Coalition deserve a third term in government, or is it time to give Bill Shorten and Labor a crack? Prime Minister Scott Morrison starts on the back foot, behind in the polls and needing to make up several seats to form government. He's begun his campaign with a strong pitch on the Coalition's economic management. Here's political reporter Tom Eagledon in Canberra.
I believe that we must win this election for the interests of our country.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison broke with tradition in taking the short drive from the Lodge to Government House early in the morning on a Thursday to see the Governor-General, Sir Peter Cosgrove. The formalities were over quickly. After only 5 minutes, he emerged, shook hands with Sir Peter and took C1 back to Parliament House, where he announced the date of the election.
We have a plan to make Australia stronger. And on the 18th of May, Australians will have the opportunity to back that plan as we're backing them.
With a budget delivered last week and facing an opposition leader in Bill Shorten, who's not seen as connecting with voters, Scott Morrison's framing the election in stark terms.
Elections are all about questions of trust and our record of delivery on the things that Australians rely on. The economy they live in and the services that they rely on is very clear.
Mr. Shorten's in his home city of Melbourne today, tweeting a dawn selfie at Moonee Ponds within his electorate before heading to a suburban house to meet Jackie and Richard in the electorate of Deakin in the city's outer east.
You work in retail, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so, please, about the penalty rate policy.
Coming
I
back,
can see
yeah.
that, you know, how that affects a lot of people.
Yeah, great.
Deakin's held by the Liberals, Michael Sukkar, on a margin of 6%, a sign Labor has once safe coalition seats in its sights for the campaign and a hope that cost of living pressures will help swing voters to the opposition's column.
Because it's a middle class area, it doesn't mean that people aren't doing it hard.
Exactly right.
And, you know, people are both working, the
yep.
energy bills keep going up.
Yep.
And, you know, the school excursions, my daughter had a camp and some of the parents couldn't afford the extra for
Absolutely.
The camp.
Yep.
How do we get to that in public schools where that becomes an issue?
Labor begins the campaign in the box seat. After a redistribution of electoral boundaries last year, the opposition has a nominal 72 seats, the coalition 73. The magic number to form majority government is 76. Given Labor goes into the campaign with a 4-point lead in news poll, it'll be favoured to take the 4 extra seats it needs to claim victory. On current polling, the coalition would lose around 10 seats. Deputy Prime Minister Michael McCormack says he's not worried.
If you believed in opinion polls, well, Will Hodgman wouldn't be Premier of Tasmania, Stephen Marshall wouldn't be Premier of South Australia, you probably wouldn't have Donald Trump in the White House, and the England and the UK would still be in the European Union.
Queensland and Victoria shape as the key battleground states, though, as always, New South Wales's clutch of marginal seats will also have a strong impact on the result. Labor holds the most marginal seat in the current parliament, Herbert, based around the North Queensland city of Townsville, which Cathy O'Toole holds by just 37 votes. No sooner had the election been called than the coalition's candidate there, Philip Thompson, was holding his first campaign doorstop.
I fought in Afghanistan in a war. I've continued to fight for veterans' needs and issues, and I fought for people that didn't have a voice.
Herbert is a microcosm of the North-South divide that will likely come to define this campaign. The huge Adani Carmichael coal mine planned for central Queensland and approved in Canberra this week is unpopular in inner-city southern seats, but gives Phil Thompson an edge in clawing back Herbert for the government.
Does Cathy O'Toole support Adani? Yes or no? No ifs, no buts. yes or no.
And he's promising a clean fight despite the emotions attached to the climate change issue.
The party I'm in won't be slinging mud. That's not what we're going to be doing.
A bigger problem for the coalition's the mud they've been flinging at each other in recent years. Scott Morrison says voters can be confident he'll remain as Prime Minister if the coalition's returned.
If I'm re-elected as Prime Minister, then I will serve as your Prime Minister because the rules have been changed to prevent the things that have happened in the past.
That's the Prime Minister Scott Morrison, ending that report by political reporter Tom Eagledon in Canberra. And the opposition leader Bill Shorten spoke in Melbourne a short time ago.
The election's been called, and today the case to vote Labor is that we will deliver more jobs, better health and education, take real action on climate change and renewable energy, and help push energy prices down. We'll get on top of cost of living burdens and we'll get wages moving again in this country. And we can manage the economy in the interest of working middle-class people because my team is united.
Bill Shorten speaking there. Well, one state where the coalition could sustain serious damage is Victoria, where there's a large number of marginal seats. Samantha Donovan is in Prahran, which is in the electorate of Higgins in Melbourne's inner southeast.
Well, it's going to be an interesting one to watch, I think, Sarah. The retiring member is the Liberals' Kelly O'Dwyer, who succeeded Peter Costello in the seat. As you said, it's always been a Liberal stronghold. It's held at the moment by a margin of 7.4%. But it's quite a diverse electorate, taking in the wealthier suburbs like Toorak and Armidale, but also the more left-leaning suburbs of Prahran, where I am this morning. I remember speaking to dyed-in-the-wool Liberal supporters in Armidale after Malcolm Turnbull was deposed last year, and the Conservative voters there were absolutely seething about the change of leadership. So it'll be interesting to see if that influences voters in this electorate. The Liberal candidate is paediatrician Katie Allen, who contested the Victorian election in November but lost the state seat to the Greens. The Greens are fielding Jason Ball in Higgins. But as a sign Labor thinks it may have a chance here, the sign, I guess, came a few weeks ago when it dropped its candidate, Josh Spiegel, and replaced him with QC Fiona McLeod, who's a former president of the Law Council of Australia. So many of the pundits are predicting the Liberals will face a tough contest, with climate change policy a big issue for some of the voters here. It's quite a similar situation to that we see in Josh Frydenberg's neighbouring seat of Kooyong, with the Greens and an independent, Olivia Yates, I should say, challenging the Treasurer on that issue as well. But back here in Higgins, these are the views of a couple of voters I spoke to this morning.
I'm sure people are ready for a change. A lot of people around here are concerned about climate and people, and that just being ignored, you know, and feeling like, you know, the plastics in the ocean, our landfill issues, pollution, just all of that.
The Liberal government probably over the last however many years have kind of made a bit of a bungle of all of the sort of power that they've seemed to have been given. They have made a bunch of promises that they haven't come through on.
Some voters in Higgins there. And Sam, you mentioned the neighbouring seat of Kooyong, another one to watch. What other seats should we be watching in Victoria?
Well, there are other seats in the state on far tighter margins than Higgins and Kooyong, Sarah. Chisholm in the eastern suburbs, which is held by the Liberals, or was won by the Liberals at the last election, held by a margin of 2.9%. But it has a new Liberal candidate because Julia Banks resigned from the party, of course, and she's now an independent, taking on the Health Minister, Greg Hunt, in his seat of Flinders, which is another interesting contest. La Trobe in the outer east of Melbourne, which the Libs hold by a 3.2% margin. Jason Wood will be trying to retain the seat there. In Melbourne's outer east, there's Casey, which the Speaker, Tony Smith, holds by a 4.5% margin. And then a crucial regional seat is Corangamite, which the Liberals' Sarah Henderson will be trying to hang on to. But the redistribution there will make things difficult for her, the pundits are predicting. And it's now notionally a Labor seat with a 0.3% margin. Dunkley looks like it'll be another tight contest as well. It's in the outer southeast, taking in the Frankston area. It's held by the Liberals' Chris Crowther, but a redistribution there makes it another notional Labor seat.
And that's Samantha Donovan in the seat of Higgins in Melbourne's inner southeast. Well, seats in Victoria and Queensland might decide this election, but spare a thought for the voters of New South Wales, who had a state poll less than 3 weeks ago. At that election, they chose to return a coalition government to power for a third term. But will they do so again at a federal level? Thomas Ariti has been taking a look.
Xander's on his way to work in Sydney's CBD. He comes from Wollongong, south of the city, and wants his next MP to keep that commute in mind.
Currently, the trains run once an hour, which is really sucky. So there's been like on and off things talking about like duplicating railroads and like increased frequency. So yeah, the biggest issue for this election for me would be the infrastructure of New South Wales.
Rita's hopping off a ferry and hopes this election isn't just about transport. She's already made up her mind.
I've always voted for Pauline Hanson, and so if Labor or Liberal aren't in favour of her, they definitely won't be getting my vote this year.
So what issues do matter?
Hospitals, infrastructure, schooling definitely, and, you know, hopefully making Australia a better place. And immigration, that's really important.
Ed's concerned about one political trend in particular.
I'd like to see a lot less independence, because that's what's disrupting the system of government. We need government, not politics.
And for him, it's all about economic growth. Like in the recent New South Wales election, he's voting for the coalition.
Economy drives everything. What we need to be doing is not planning for ourselves, but planning for our grandchildren and their grandchildren.
But the views are mixed in former Prime Minister Tony Abbott's electorate of Warringah.
It's time for Tony to go. You know, I've got parents who are rusted on voters and things. I've got friends who are absolutely rusted on voters, but I think that we need to move on.
We need someone who's paying attention, that's going to take care of this environment, this climate.
I've voted Liberals for many, many years, and I know there are issues both sides, but then, you know, you seem to revert to the tried and true, and that's what I've been doing for many years.
Warringah's not the only seat that'll be closely watched in New South Wales. The Liberal Party's Dave Sharma will be hoping to topple independent Keren Phelps in Wentworth. It could be a close battle a little further south in Banks. While in the city's inner west, Liberal MP Craig Laundy isn't contesting the electorate of Reid, which is traditionally a Labor seat. The ALP's been campaigning there for some time, while the Liberal candidate was formally endorsed just days ago. The Liberal Party will also be hoping to pick up Lindsay in Western Sydney. It's currently held by the ALP on a small margin, but Labor's Emma Hussar was disendorsed late last year.
The seats in New South Wales can broadly be classed as a bit of high drama but low impact.
Dr. Andy Marks is a political scientist and an assistant vice chancellor at Western Sydney University.
Yes, you'll see some indication of the results that we saw in the New South Wales poll, where some of those Nationals and Liberal held seats that overlap, the seats that were lost at that poll, might be under threat. But really, I think a lot of the anger was vented at the New South Wales election.
Some of the tightest contests will be outside Sydney. The Prime Minister's hand-picked candidate for Gilmore on the south coast, Warren Mundine, will be up against former State Nationals MP Katrina Hodgkinson and Labor's Fiona Phillips. Up north in the Nationals-held seat of Lyne, some voters know their priorities.
Climate change, immigration, boat people, that's pretty much the main goal.
To be quite honest, I think that the party that we have is doing a very good job.
Others are disenchanted with the major parties.
The Labor Party is all about unionists, and if you've worked in the building industry and have to face up to those people, you know what they're really like. They're not nice people. And yet the Liberals, they seem to favour big business.
But for some, back in Sydney, there's just relief. We finally have a date. Others want the whole thing to be over.
I just think it's stupid. We have to vote again, and they're all the same. They promise you this and that, but only think of themselves.
I thought it would have been called last Sunday, but they took their time about it. And it's about time. I mean, everybody's been expecting it. They've been in election mode for the last couple of weeks.
Voters in Sydney there, and Thomas Ariti with that report. Well, Dr. Jill Shepherd is a political analyst at the Australian National University. I spoke to her a short time ago.
As always, this campaign is going to be fought broadly over the issues of economic management on the Liberal side and public health, education and inequality on the Labor side. As long as we are thinking about those issues, we tend to prefer either party, depending on what we're thinking about. So we can't be convinced ever that the Labor Party is going to be the party of economic management, just as we can't be convinced that the Liberal Party will ever be the party to look after public health or education. And so increasingly, they just don't talk about each other's issues. We won't talk about immigration because neither party really wants to bring that up. We won't talk much probably about social issues. We won't talk about, you know, issues like euthanasia or drug liberalisation. They're just things that the parties don't want us thinking about. So as long as they can keep us blinkered and focused on the issues that best suit them electorally, then they're happy.
And who's ahead in this corralling the attention of voters? Are we mostly thinking about economic management, or are we mostly thinking about health and education?
Well, between elections, it's really interesting. We do tend to think more about the economy. And then when we come into elections, we know that voters start to focus on issues like service delivery, and that tends to be hospitals and schools. We also know that since the 2016 election, the vast majority of us, about 70% of voters, don't think that the government can have any real effect on the economy at all. We're starting to embrace the idea of globalisation and larger economic forces. We won't see another who do you trust on interest rates kind of campaign. And as long as we think like this, as long as we're cynical about the government's capacity to manage the economy or to fix the economy, then that really disadvantages the Liberal Party. So we're going to see probably over the next 5 to 10 years a bit of a shift in how the Liberal Party campaigns. They will talk more about national security. They will talk more about broader themes of stability and conservative values. But at the moment, they're probably in a transition period of moving from emphasising the economy at the expense of all other issues to having to talk a bit more broadly.
Queensland and Victoria are the battleground states for this election. They're very different electorates. How can the two major parties please both of these states at once?
They can't. And this is a real problem increasingly for both major parties, is that we have a very rigorously disciplined political culture in Australia. Independent candidates, individual candidates aren't encouraged to express themselves in a way that deviates from the party line. So as long as we're trying to do that, as long as we are trying to convince voters in Queensland and Victoria and in Tasmania and Western Australia that all the candidates broadly believe the same things, then we're going to be upsetting some people. I think the parties are starting to realise this, and we may see them allow their candidates to go a little bit more off-leash, I guess, in this election campaign. But certainly at the moment, everything they say in Queensland, it becomes news in Victoria or Western Australia. And so I think this sort of era of national media, internet, social media, it's sort of catching up on the parties at the moment.
And Dr. Shepherd is a political analyst at the Australian National University. Well, with an election campaign now officially underway, business groups are hoping the two major parties push long-term reform ahead of short-term sugar hits for voters. But with slogans already in abundance on day one, they're managing their expectations. Here's the ABC's senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan.
The big three business lobby groups have been frantically working on their election wish lists in the hope of seeing proposals for long-term economic reform. Having skipped the normal submissions in the lead-up to an election-themed budget, positive but bruised after years of leadership instability in Canberra on both sides of politics. Business Council of Australia Chief Executive Jennifer Westacott has been out and about getting robust feedback from voters in regional Australia.
They want to see a plan. They want to see where the country's going, the direction it's going, how we're going to get there. They want their wages up, their power bills down.
Given that you've been concerned about the lack of big picture initiatives on economic reform, what hope do you have during the spin of an election campaign?
Having a blame game, having an anti-business, anti-growth agenda is not going to address the issues that people talk to us about. People have to ask themselves, is a 2.3% annual GDP growth off the back of years on average of over threes going to be good enough to get people's wages up? Is it going to be good enough to get the sort of services and budgets that people want?
It's a similar message from James Pearson, Chief Executive of the small business-focused Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, better known as ACCI.
We're looking to the next federal government of Australia to recognise that small business is a big deal.
We want to see improvements in workplace relations so that it's easier to hire people. We want to see power prices come down and stay down.
Some people, or a lot of people, have become cynical in the lead up to this election campaign with the various leadership changes. Are you one of those cynics, or are you hopeful that we might actually see proper policies beyond the spin?
There's no doubt that stability in leadership is something that has been sorely lacking for the last few years in Australian politics at the national level. There's also no doubt that the appetite for meaningful reform has tended to disappear. We want to see the next federal government tackle the big issues that are affecting businesses, because businesses, large and small, are the engine room of the Australian economy.
Innes Willox is chief executive of the Australian Industry Group. He's a former journalist, one-time Alexander Downer chief of staff and diplomat. He's hopeful there'll be some big thinking on long-term policies after seeing Prime Minister after Prime Minister through the revolving door. But at the same time, he's pragmatic.
Well, our hope, maybe it's the hope beyond hope, but our hope is for a good debate around policy, and that the election be forward-looking, that there be a focus on what Australia needs and will look like in the future around key areas like skills, education and training, tax reform. The last thing we need is an election full of blame and shame and recrimination and finger-pointing.
You're sounding pretty positive and optimistic, but you know what election campaigns are like.
I think all the commentators are saying it's going to be a rough and tough election, a fairly close election, and there are significant global headwinds surrounding us, so we need some real policy depth to help us navigate through it. If we don't get it, we'll probably just end up being buffeted around and being a little bit like a cork in the ocean, and we're better than that.
Innes Willox, Chief Executive of the Australian Industry Group, with the ABC's Senior Business Correspondent, Peter Ryan. This is The World Today, and if you miss a program, you can find us on the ABC Listen app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. British MPs have been granted another last-minute extension for Brexit by the European Union, with the deadline now set for the rather ominous date of Halloween. The UK was set to leave the EU tomorrow, despite not having reached an agreement on what a deal to do so would look like. Now they've been granted a reprieve until October. For more on this, I spoke to Professor Bruce Wilson, Director of the European Union Centre at RMIT.
The new date that's been given, as the CNN put it, is Halloween, 31st of October 2019. So it extends by the best part of another 6 months the time available to the United Kingdom to sort out the terms on which they can agree to pass the withdrawal agreement.
So the Day of the Dead is going to be the day of reckoning for Brexit now. But there's more happening in between, isn't there? It's looking likely that the UK will have to field candidates in the EU parliamentary elections next month if they can't agree to a Brexit deal. What will the impact of that be?
Well, this is a huge issue, and it's one that Theresa May had been desperate to avoid, because all the indications are that if there are elections held with the European Parliament or any other legislative environment, the Conservatives will get smashed. And the implications both for individual politicians and for the Conservative Party are looking pretty serious. So I think she's been desperate to try and avoid that. The European elections are the 23rd to the 26th of May, so that's a little over a month away. It is possible, if they can agree a withdrawal agreement before the 22nd of May and have it signed off, then they can get agreement from the EU to not participate. But so that means there's kind of another month for the next crucial deadline. The following deadline after that would be the 30th of June, because the new European Parliament will sit on the 1st of July. And Theresa May herself has said that if the UK were still to be part of the EU after the 30th of June, then she would resign. So they're probably the next two critical dates.
Crashing out of the EU has been prevented at the last minute, in effect, by the goodwill of the EU this time round. Is their patience running thin with this process?
The short answer is absolutely yes. And the goodwill is perhaps not the right word to use. Certainly from the point of view of the French, Emmanuel Macron, I don't think there's much goodwill left there at all. He's begrudgingly agreed to this further extension. He's very concerned that the continued delay for Brexit is distracting the EU from other important things. On the other hand, Angela Merkel and the Irish Prime Minister are both very, very concerned for obvious reasons that no deal Brexit be avoided at all possible costs.
And that's Professor Bruce Wilson, the Director of the European Union Centre at RMIT. And that's all from the World Today team for this Thursday. Linda Mottram and PM will be along this evening. We'll be back same time tomorrow with more stories from across Australia and around the world. I'm Sarah Dingle. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Stephen Smiley.
And I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and we're from The Signal. It's the ABC's daily news and current affairs podcast, where we try to break down the biggest stories.
And today we're talking electric cars. So the Labor Party is set to announce funds for electric car manufacturing. So why is the government so riled up about this, and is Bill Shorten really coming to take your ute away?
We are going to stand by our tradies, and we are going to save their utes.
Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.